This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Well, indeed, you are on the right platform, the powerful platform, Power 98.7, the line to dial. When I flirt with an open conversation at times, I do tend to forget that I need to remind you to call on 0861-987-000. This is going to be a powerful conversation, and this is a great mind. Mulaudi Sekake, I've known him for some years now, and have enjoyed knowing him, the commoner. Mulaudi Sekake, how are you? Are you good?
I'm kicking my brother.
No, that's good. That's good. That's good to know. I think let's get straight into it. One of the greatest things I've admired about you is immersing yourself ideologically, particularly on socialism. One would think, you know, young people are not really that ideologically oriented. What is it that took you to this place of focus and immersion?
Well, thanks, my brother, and thanks for the invitation to the program. Thanks, it's an honor. Well, I don't know what to say. It's a very tricky question because I don't want to sing for my own supper or understood to be beating my own drum.
Yeah.
No. But, to be fair to you, I think the conditions led me to explore, you know, theories and paradigms of thought that are responsive to my life. Mm. You know, it's actually conditions where we come from, how we were brought up, and what aspirations do we have in life. So basically, that's the long and short answer I can provide. You know, there was no... It was not pre-planned that, look, you were going to be born, you will grow, and then at a particular stage of your life, you will, fall in love with this theory or that theory. Mm. Actually, conditions led me to admire certain philosophical ways of thinking and certain ways of going about things.
I mean, yeah. You say conditions, and part of those conditions, some call you umfana wase Clermont. And, you know, Clermont in Durban holds an interesting place in our history, in the activism landscape. It has produced a significant number of activists during the liberation struggle and still continues today. How did, you know, the conditions as a Clermont shape you when you were growing up in that particular space?
Thank you very much. I think it's a wonderful question. Clermont, like you are saying, has a very long political history. You know, when there was violence in KZN, there were areas where, you know, comrades of the ANC, the SACP, were not allowed to go to. And they were chased away. Their houses were burned. Their lives were, you know, under threat. So what happened is that Clermont is one of those areas that welcomed people from different areas where there was violence.
Mm.
So from there on, it was like a safe haven. It was a sanctuary where people knew when they were in Clermont, their lives were kind of safe, they were secure, and they could be able to continue to live as human beings. But also, there's a particular economic history of Clermont which people are not aware of.
Yes.
But Clermont is surrounded by an industrial area called New German.
Mm.
You know? So it's one of those apartheid township, imaginations. So what happens is that people from Clermont, are wage laborers. So they rely on being employed by the surrounding industrial areas in New German. So if you go to Clermont in the morning and or later in the evening, you'd see people in the morning going to work and later on going back to their own places. But also there is a specific industrial activity that became a kind of a key factor in Clermont, hence, you know, the presence of the hostel.
Mm.
One of the biggest in the country is that Most people who own taxis in Clermont now began working there. It was like cotton. It was like a really powerhouse for production of industrial goods and all those things, you know. And then most people, so the hostel was built basically to house that cheap labor so that it works in that particular area. Now, when the during the era of neoliberalism, when you know the gates were opened for trade liberalization, so to speak, and then that area suffered a lot, and people lost their jobs because there was now competition, and the industry was no longer protected by government. So cheap goods flooded our country, and particularly that area, and then people lost jobs, and some bought taxis, and some ventured into different activities. So that's how it came about. So it is actually a township of wage laborers. And the most of us as youngsters in the township, the aspirations we have is that we escape, you know, the violence of wage labor, the violence where because most of youngsters, especially black and women, have to go through that process where they are employed but underpaid. So that is the long and, you know, short history of Clermont, because we can't even spend, you know, much time speaking about
No, absolutely. But I mean, you really put us into my next question. Some of your work is really about interrogating the power dynamics that are there in society. And you're already talking to them. You know, sometimes you're employed, but you are underpaid, which amounts to underpayment and, you know, just almost getting slave wages in some instances. And it absolutely talks to this question of poverty that we have in our country. I mean, when we continuously talk, Mulaudi, about, you know, there's poverty, we need a poverty alleviation scheme, we need a poverty eradication scheme, we need social security. What are some of the questions that we are not asking about the question of poverty in our society and how best to resolve it?
Oh, okay, thanks. Yeah. You know, I think one of the greatest limitations we have is that we have this money-centric conception of life, of success. You know, when you talk about poverty, even your mainstream scholarship talks about people who live below a particular dollar a day. So it's a money-centric conception of how we should live.
Yeah.
And that is the greatest limitation. You know why? It is because beyond getting money, human beings are very complex. Human beings are emotional. Human beings are psychological. Human beings are sexual. Human beings are spiritual. So getting money does not basically equate to you living the life that you desire, you know. And I will make a very practical example. Now we have cases of mental health illnesses.
Yes.
Where people, of course, some are highly paid, but there is this spiritual lack, there is this emotional lack, there is this psychological lack. Because by fulfilling only one aspect of our existence, which is economic, it doesn't respond to the totality of human existence. We don't exist as economic beings. We exist in a complex way. And our notion of development, our notion of success must incorporate not only one, but this multi, you know, a faceted form of existence. And that is the only way we can go about it. The other thing which, when I'm good, which is the greatest limitation, is how we calculate our economic well-being or lack thereof. I mean, you know, you are a person of academia. You know the limitations of the GDP.
Yeah.
You know, GDP only quantifies that which is exchangeable. That is the bottom line. Anything that can be exchanged is counted as part of the GDP. But there are so many activities that are carried out in our communities, which basically are not the subject of the economic logic, which fall outside of the conventional measurement of how we talk about our economy or how we conceptualize economy. So Basically, those are some of the things that we really need to talk about, because this money-centric stroke economic-centric conception of life impoverishes who we are, but most importantly, who we should be in pursuit of our own freedom proper.
And Skake, why is this holistic development narrative missing in our policy articulation?
It is because we are still under the yoke of the coloniality of knowledge. And that which presupposes our own understanding of development is very problematic, and we have not gone out to challenge it out, in a very honest, thorough, and frank way. So what happens is that those who have resources to help us reimagine our lives, how we think, how we do things every day, have chosen to actually identify a niche in unequal power relations. So instead of challenging unequal power relations, they just want to find their space in those unequal power relations. And that is the problem. Because if it were otherwise, they would be able to say, look, our scholarship is not responsive.
Yeah.
Our knowledge production discourse is not responsive to our conditions. So how do we change it? And I'll make a practical example, which, of course, I tend to be accused as a skills deficit denialist. We don't have a skills crisis.
Just come back closer to your mic before you make that point. You've made this point a number of times over the years in my presence, the skills deficit crisis.
No, we don't. There is no such. I can argue it till, hands grow horns. I'm saying there's no skills deficit crisis. What we have, you remember, Lukona, when we were in campus, we had a program by the Society of Commons.
And I'm going to come to that after our news headlines to expose it on that Society of Commons.
Yes. So we had a topic: are we really unemployable, or is the economy stupid? So the idea of a skills deficit, that no, we must prepare young people for the market, that is nonsensical. Why can't we question the structure and the nature of the economy as to whether it's responsive to us, instead of human beings running helter-skelter, wanting to fit into a theme?
Skake, hold it right there. I want to go to news headlines and we'll come back and just stay in the same position you are, where I can hear you properly. 0861-987-000 with my guest Mulaudi Skake, development activist. Join us in this conversation. Time for Power News Headlines with Thomas White.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mbuni. Call Lukhona on 0861-987-000.
And you can tweet me at Lukhona Mbuni, hashtag Power Talk. And we are back on this open conversation with Mulaudi Skake, development activist. Skake, let me get back to that question. Is the economy stupid?
Not only stupid, dangerous.
Mm.
So the idea is that, basically the argument is that, why should human beings fit into a thing? Why can't a thing respond to beings? That's it. So the whole logic of saying, no, we must prepare young people to fit into the economy, as if the economy is something, that exists independent of people's realities. No, it can't. That narrative is problematic, that narrative is dangerous, and it has to be challenged.
They say it's the free market, Skake. So what do you say?
Exactly. Because what happens is that, what it actually says is that human beings are disposable. You get into the labor market, you are used, you suffer from cancer as a result of the working conditions, you are replaced with another human being who is going to be subject to the very same conditions. So disposability of humanity. So what we need to do, we need an economic setup that is responsive to our conditions. If it is not responsive to our conditions, then it's not worth our labor, it's not worth our thinking, and it's not worth our commitment and loyalty.
Mm. Now, Skake, you touched on that skills deficit and you're expanding on it. Now, you spoke of at UKZN, I mean, you were co-founding there the Society of Commons. I mean, when I put your post up, somebody called you an ordinary folk. What is the motivation behind the idea of commons, and how can it enable us to probably think and relate differently to each other as humanity?
Yeah, okay, thanks. You know, the idea of the commons basically could be counterposed to the idea of private ownership.
Mm.
You know, so what we sought to cultivate was that we really need to own things equally. You know, the resources beneath our soil, in the oceans, wherever, you know. So the idea of preserving the commons, it was the idea that we need to benefit equally from the common resources that nature has given us. So that was the whole idea. So we were using, you know, seminars, symposiums, you know, writing sessions, reading sessions to proselytize the idea that this is what really we need to embody as human beings. The whole notion of having your own stuff at your own corner, and then in order to preserve it, in order to protect it, you must take advantage of others. And then whenever you find an opportunity, you grab everything, you hold, even if in the context of poverty, where there is like a particular lack, you know.
So
the
idea was to cultivate a particular velo system of a humanistic approach to our existence, a responsive way of living, where there is mutual trust, where there is harmony, where there is tolerance, but also where there is collective prosperity, not where someone is going to have more than any other member of society.
I mean, Skages, you are saying that you spoke about money-centric ideas as well earlier on in this conversation. I'm just wondering how difficult. I mean, yesterday I had an interesting thought council with young people looking at a possible, you know, a youth towards a youth revolution.
I was listening to that.
Yeah, so yeah. Towards a youth revolution in South Africa, the system itself will continue to hold, will continue to be embedded for as long as it has its reinforcers.
Yeah,
how do we then think of ways to disrupt and dismantle the system?
Yeah. Okay. One of the practical ways is to allow the possibility to imagine our lives and ourselves beyond wage labor.
Mm.
That wage labor is not the alpha and omega of who we are. Meaning we need to organize ourselves in such a way that when we wake up in the morning, we want to write poetry, we do so. We want to go fishing, we do so. We want to hunt, we do so. We are not conditioned in such a way that we wake up, go work, someone has to pay you after some time. And then, unfortunately, you are not even in charge of how much you are paid. The irony of the system we live under is that normally when you sell something, you determine its price, isn't it?
Mm.
When you sell something, you can't go to the market and then someone who buys tells you, I want to buy this with this particular amount of money. No, when you sell something, you determine the price. You say, ngidayisa makwinya, ayile mali. Ngidayisa ubontshisi, ngidayisa umbila, ayile mali. The irony of the system of capitalism is that those who sell their labor power do not have a say of how much their labor power should be.
Mm.
So they just go into the labor market. Those who buy it tell them how much they are going to give them for their labor power. That is the greatest irony of our lifetime. How come you, the owner of the product, you can't even say how much you sell your product?
Mm.
You are told by someone who buys it that I want to buy. I want to buy it. You get a point.
Mm.
So you don't decide. That on its own should tell us that there is something wrong and dangerous about the system we live under. If we take it as normal, then somewhere, somehow, up the stairs, we are not fine. You know. So basically we need to build alternative, ways, go about alternative practices of living where we are not bound and we are not tethered to an economic system that wants us to tire ourselves, to affirm ourselves. We cannot afford. You know, in South Africa, they are, you know, cooperatives. And
yes.
There's a notion of solidarity economy where we build an economy that is
like I said initially, that responds to our emotional needs, to our psychological needs, to our spiritual needs. Now, people go to work. And if you go out, there's a lot of research that tells you that people go to work, they are so stressed. In actual fact, the antidepressant industry is growing. Abantu badla amaphilisi. Bese mama befika emsebenzini. Abanye abakhulumi, they suppress, you know, how they are treated. Some are told. In fact, there are some signs in some workplaces where you are told, leave your emotions at home as if you are not an emotional human being.
Yeah.
You get it? Well, this causes so much tension, so much trauma that we don't speak out, that we don't, you know, overcome. And as a result, we become people going to the boardrooms wearing ties, but we are just walking ghosts, you know, pretending to be making it. In actual fact, while we are nowhere to be seen. Look on, and the other thing which I want to say, which is very important, is that in order to build alternative imaginations, alternative communities, alternative ways of living, our way of doing things has to be inclusive. And if it has to be inclusive, it has to be, you know, it has to be anti-homophobic.
Yeah.
You know, we must not allow any homophobia. We must not allow any transphobic attitude. We must not allow anything that seeks to divide those who are oppressed so that it takes advantage of us. So our own notion of development has to be so inclusive in such a way that we reimagine our interpersonal relations even amongst ourselves.
Skage, just hold that thought. I've got Michael and Natty on the line. Listen closely so that you can be able to respond to them. The line is 0861-987-000. Development activist Mulaudi Skage is my open conversation guest this morning. Natty, good morning.
Good morning, Lukona, and good morning to your guest.
Yes, bro.
Lukona, I'm not as eloquent as your guest, but I'm hoping I can be able to advance the point that I want to make. Lukona, I want to humbly disagree with you, with the brother on the line, because he seemed not to be realistic in some of the points he's advancing. The first one, he's saying we must develop economies that can adapt to us as human beings. But he's making a mistake that does not recognize that human beings, by their nature, they adapt, they evolve. And as such, human beings are also influenced by the environment in which they operate in and that they live in as well. Therefore, as a human being, the way I think, the way I do things, it's influenced by my surroundings, by how I was brought up. Therefore, as economies evolve, human beings need to adapt, because if they don't do so, they're facing a risk of not being existing or of not are finding jobs that responds to what the environment needs.
Yeah.
Therefore, we must not make the mistake that as human beings, we are not evolving. We do evolve, and the skills that we need to acquire also need to evolve, because failing to continue to develop our skills and knowledge will mean we'll become extinct. You know what I mean? And that's the point that I think my brother may be missing, unless I didn't get him. But he says we must create economies that adapt to us.
Okay.
Assuming that we are not going to evolve as human beings.
Natty, I love the question that you are raising. I'm going to give him an opportunity to respond. Stay dialed on Power 98.7. Michael, good morning. Kunjan.
Ngiyaphila mntana nkosi.
Was him now.
Look, I must first deal with this previous caller.
Kancinci kodwa, so that my guest can still deal with him.
Yes. What does it mean, evolve? Evolve into what? To nothingness? As a Christian, God created man. Man made slaves out of other men. And that's exactly what is going on right now. This type of living, of having beggars on the street, when they should have been told from when they started school that the very important thing that they have is the land which they walk upon. They do everything on land. Right now, the people in Gwasaj have been criminalized for finding a precious metal. And the state criminalizes them, because the state does not want you to have a knowledge and an understanding of what is good for you. It's always about what is good for the economy. And I agree with this guest that you have right now. We go for 12 years to school, even 15 years, others 17 years to school, but yet come out seeking work.
Yeah.
What have you been doing all that time? Accumulating knowledge, knowledge that does not automatically, immediately put you into an advantage of acquiring that which you solely need is to live. Yet you become a beggar, just like the beggar on the street, on the corner of the street. The kind of education that we are having right now is education of that subjugates us. We are being made slaves, and we are willingly committing to become slaves. That's what's going on right here.
I hear you.
It's wrong, and we need to change it. And we don't have courage because it's the scarecrow is the economy. Mm. The economy. We are the economy. I am the economy. You are right there in power right now. You are the economy. You keep the conversation going. Without you, there's no conversation. You must be there to anchor the conversation. Now, to actually take out the human being from the economy, it's actually making the human being redundant and exalting the economy into something great, which is not.
Michael,
thank you.
I hear you loud and clear. Thank you very much. I hear that passion. Mafusana, good morning.
Hey, I'd like to say I agree fully with the gentleman, Uskake, because the economy needs to adapt around people, not people around the economy. It's like going to town. If you look at how South Africa is designed, if you have to walk from one place to another, say if you have to walk from there, Lawe Nuspana corner, all the way to Kilani, to buy a cup of coffee, it's almost impossible. It's near impossible. It's designed for cars to be.
Yeah,
there's no pavement. You go to other countries around the world, you'd find that it's designed for people, and the cars then have to go around nani. So I think the economy should be done in that way also. But I disagree with him when it comes to the fact yokuthi wena mawuphethe whatever that you have, somebody else determines how much it will cost. I think he's overstating it in order to make a particular point. And I get his point, but I find it overstated because if you do not agree with what is being offered to you, if somebody tells you this is how much I will pay you for what it is that you are offering, you've got all the right to say, yazini nyabonga, and walk away. And if then I know his next question would be, then what happens to everybody? But what happens then? Then it means akekho umuntu osebenza. But if everybody then were to say, yazini, nobody takes below this certain amount, then automatically the market changes and it becomes standard, which you cannot pay below a certain amount for a particular product. So, yeah.
Okay.
Very, very good discussion. Thank you very
thank you,
much.
Thank you, Mafusana, for joining us on 0861-987-000. Skake, I'll be back with you shortly, my brother, so that you respond to those. But let me take a quick ad break.
Tweet Lukhona at Lukhona Mguni and hashtag PowerTalk.
And do dial in on 0861-987-000. Skake, let me give you an opportunity to respond.
Yeah, the last caller. I just want to start with the last caller, especially when where we seemingly differ.
Yes.
Look, under capitalism, you don't have a choice as to what you want and you don't want, because capitalism, the bedrock of capitalism is wage labor. That's how it is.
Mm.
If you are not a participant in the wage labor system, then your life is going to be so miserable in such a way that you jump into the bandwagon of a very weird notion of half a loaf is better than no bread, you know, because it's a generalized mode of production. It's not an optional mode of production. I think that is where. So we must understand the nature, the character, and the dynamics of capitalism to understand how to uproot it, how to challenge it fundamentally. So you don't have a choice. Look, I'm making a very simple example. If you are selling something, you determine the price of what you are selling. Unless someone comes and says, no, it's conventional. It's a known reality that if you sell something, you determine its price.
Mm.
How come workers who sell their labor power can't determine the price of their labor power? Instead, they have to wait for someone who has to buy their labor power to say, look, this is how much I'm going to give for labor power. Is it not ironic?
if it's not ironic, then I really don't know what to say. You know, so we are living under a generalized, the keyword generalized mode of production. It's not an optional where you can say, I know, I don't agree with you. I'll go live my own way. No, that's how it is, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So the other point is, I want to the second caller is that the first caller, by the way, is that look, again, no process of evolution is independent of the human touch, so to speak.
Mm.
No process of evolution. We, you know, some other time we'll talk about how certain ways of thinking have justified what we have come to internalize as a proper way of living. No evolution has been independent from human touch. So evolution is not some process that happens somewhere and human beings are living somewhere. Where there is an evolutionary process, there is always a particular human influence. The question is, who is this human in this day and age influencing our own process of evolution?
Mm.
Then once we identify, because we are located beings, we speak from where we come from, we speak from what we experience, then we'll be able to say, those who are in charge of our evolutionary process are the ones in charge of the terms and conditions of how we must enter the labor market and how we must live beyond the labor market, or how the labor market must shape our own livelihood from how we make sex in our own bedrooms and everything else. That's how it happens. Mm. We need not shy away from these things. How we eat, how many times we eat per day, how many pills we... Every facet of our own life is determined by those who shape our imagination of what we do every second, every nanosecond.
And what is deemed acceptable. I think Michael was really just agreeing with you, talking about, you know, a schooling system that is making people beggars of jobs as well.
And I want to make a practical example. Look, At Clermont, there are young people. Ne? I just want to make a practical example.
Mm.
Who is in charge of the definition of what skill is? Clermont, beyond being surrounded by an industrial area called Clermont, New German, it's surrounded by Westville, Kloof, and of course, some suburban, you know, New German areas. You know what happens? Every day, trucks, vans by white folks come fetch people to go renovate, do roofing, flooring, and even build mansions.
Mm.
Those people are not considered to be skilled because they don't have any certification. You know, but these people build mansions. They are, put in vans early in the morning. They are taken back in the late hours, back to their shanty towns, back to what I refer to as the gutter. But those people are not considered skilled. Why? Because skilled is that which is recognized by our conventional power structures, their conventional definitions, their conventional way of what skill is. You have got so many people doing so many things in our own time. I'm not trying to romanticize my areas.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to romanticize our own spaces. We are oppressed. We are gutters.
Skage, just hold that idea so that I squeeze in Jackie and Godfrey and you are able to respond to them. Jackie in Durban and Kakasini, good morning.
Hey, I'm good. Who's that?
Hey, who are you, Antilo? I'm good. How are you, buddy?
I'm all right, man. Yeah, you know, I was listening quietly, but then, you know, I thought you guys were having a really dynamic, thorough and illuminating engagement.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of triggered, somewhat taken aback by the caller who was trying at least somehow, you know, to undo the work. Of course, he has a right to express his views.
Yeah.
Mine is a simple one, Mguni.
Yes.
Start, of course, I mean, you've laid it out so with such great erudition and eloquence. We, as long as we do not probe and interrogate the underlying structure of the economy.
Mm.
Remember, 1994 is an inheritance moment. The democratic dispensation inherits the racial colonial state with the racial and colonial economy. It doesn't disrupt it. It doesn't dismantle it. So the mode of accumulation still perpetuates the same iniquities that were intended by the 1652 project, which has not been wrestled with, let alone any attempt to disrupt it and then create, as Skaka was saying, a people-centered egalitarian economic structure.
Jackie, let me leave it there so that I give Skaka a chance to respond. Thank you so much for dialing in, my brother. Godfrey, good morning. Quickly, please.
Zikona, Sanbona Lukona, and everybody in Skaka, thank you for the good topic, my brother. This is fresh, it's new, it's relevant, it's true. We need to move away from the Eurocentric economic system. From the onset, when they set foot on this continent, they came to enslave us. We are not friends with the Europeans. Every 100 years, they reinvent themselves, coming with new ways of how to enslave us.
Mm.
When they came here, we didn't have economic systems as complex that they have, but we lived. We have cattle. We didn't have hospitals. We didn't get sick. We didn't have water system, sewerage, but we lived. We didn't have cholera.
Okay.
So they came and changed our ways. And then if we think going to universities is going to make those people love us, no. They control the when you pass medicine, you have to join their medical association. If you come up with something different from what they prescribe, they kick you out.
Godfrey, point well made in Zamdela. I'm going to be out of time. Sky, get 1 minute to reflect. You are also about to launch another book, Reflections from the Gutter. Just conclude our conversation in a minute.
Yeah, I agree with the callers. I don't want to labor much.
Yeah.
But I'm saying we need to cultivate counter-hegemonic imaginations so that we rehumanize ourselves.
Mm.
So the rest of other things we're going to talk about it some other time, but we are launching a book which is called Meditations from the Gutter.
Yes.
On the 3rd of July in Durban, Bed Center. Basically, it's not about a book. It's about bringing together a community of thinkers, activists, scholars, artists, so that we heal and free ourselves. So it's going to be on the 3rd of July at Bed Center. It is what we refer to as the Festival of the Gutters.
Okay.
You come, music, jazz, food, and you connect and interact with many other young folks.
Skage.
And also, Lukona, my brother, I wish you luck in your NYDA interview, my brother.
Let me wish you luck as well, because you'll be participating. Muladi Skage, development activist there, joining us this morning on an open conversation.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.